And Richard and I both have some experience with Manhattan real estate. Some. I lived in it for 50 years, often and most entirely in rent-controlled apartments on the Upper West Side. And now we have the Supreme Court weighing in one more time with an issue that Richard has explicated over the years. This is SCOTUS blog headline, meaning very dry. Justices reject New York landlord's petition to end rent stabilization system. In the plain language of somebody who's been in a rent-controlled apartment, rent control is the reason there's so few apartments available, is the reason that people are paying wildly different rates, is the reason there's tension between landlords and those of us who rent for 50 years, and still the court won't act. Professor, when will they act? When will they recognize that the market is distorted?
Never, I think, is the short answer. One of the things that happened is that there was a short comment, not a dissent, by Justice Thomas saying, in an appropriate case, he thinks when we have the full facts and circumstances of an individual set of circumstances, we should consider this again. His approach is essentially as disastrous with respect to remedies and rent control as is that of a majority. Rent control is a structural phenomenon. If you start saying we have to look at each case specifically to see whether or not the landlord is getting enough return, you're going to have 600,000 units and nothing is going to be done. What somebody has to do is to look at this as a structural problem and realize that rent control is the following transaction. In the ordinary common law world, after a lease is over, the landlord can throw out the tenant and take the premises back and rent them out again or to use them himself, all at market value. Under rent control, those rights, which are what's worth, say, in a particular case, $100,000, the only thing you get is the ability to excuse a tenant who doesn't pay the rent or commits a nuisance. But the government then gives him the lease at a rate that it stipulates, which is by definition far below the market rate. So in a place like New York City, where I sometimes reside, it's the case in which you have essentially units that are unregulated, selling for $10,000, $11,000 a month, or regulated units have to be under $2,500 a month, which means there's $7,500 a month in free trade, which is about $100,000 subsidy to anybody who gets it, and they won't let go of it. And everybody else has to sort of strip around the edges. And so when you keep this particular system in place, the politics won't correct it because people who live in rent-controlled units will certainly vote to propane. And then every other dislocation you measure will take place, including mass exodus from New York City, a thorough reduction in the number of available beds to you, a person who lives after widowhood or whatever is divorce, old age, in a three-bedroom apartment, they won't move. And that apartment could hold a family of four. And so what you're doing, if you have 600,000 units like this, you literally can open up close to 2 million new places for people to live if you just get people to move into places that make sense. The problem with the Supreme Court could be summarized in one sense. This is an administrative constitutional federalism court. It's not what they do is bad. In fact, I support most of their initiatives. But none of these people are private lawyers, really. They're all professors having to deal with federal courts, administrative law, and the Constitution. They don't know much about property, and they don't care much about property. So that when you have a major disaster, this is what happens. And if you start just look at the headlines, the same day that this rent control stuff comes out, there's a report which indicates that people are systematically keeping units off the market because the new rent control rules give them no upside whatsoever. Better not to rent than to be locked in forever at rates that are going to cost you losing. The landlords say, we can't do this. People are leaving the city at record rates. And the Supreme Court sits there and says, well, you guys should really work out a political solution. And it turns out you can't work out a political solution under these circumstances. They've tried this for close to 100 years. And every time you get a change in the rent control laws, they get tougher and tougher on landlords. And essentially what's happening is your confiscatory situation people who should be able to take their property worth $100,000 now told that they could get $15,000, and they should be grateful for getting even that, because every time they want to make another change, the progressives in Albany or the people on the city council tighten the screws even further. The cycle gets worse, and the city will essentially disintegrate, and the Migration Act will continue. And the Supreme Court, a little bit like Nero, they start the fiddle, Rome, and now New York are burning.
1.4% is the number of rental housing stock vacant. That's the lowest in 50 years, according to these reports. Here's what this means. Manhattan is unlivable. You can't find anything to rent. If you're new to the city or if you've left your previous residence in suburbs, what that means is that people have spread out, the young people have spread out to the boroughs and to New Jersey, where there may or may not be the same stringent regulations.
Now, that's what happened. What they did is they took all the units that were trading under the rent control cap, and they reimposed the cap at the very low rate. So there used to be a pretty good market out in Astoria, Queens, and other places in the Bronx, and that's being destroyed by the new set of regulations.
Right.
And so this thing is absolutely mindless, but there's nobody on the other side who will step back and say, we have made a mistake. Now, New York City, when it comes to reexamining failed policies, is collectively brain-dead.
And the same for Albany, Professor. Hochul could weigh in on this and is avoiding it.
But no, she's even worse. I mean, you know, she does some things right, but one of the things that they want to do is to start one of these Mount Laurel-type housing programs where we break local zonings and force them to let people build where they're not wanted. And this is absolutely crazy to try to do it in that way, because it's always selective on the zoning laws, and the people who are going to build have to build certain kinds of houses that won't make money, and there'll be community fights that will go on for decades before this gets done. What they have to do is they have to free up the market rather than having another tax, another chance subsidy of one kind or another, which turns this place into a pretzel. The governor on this issue is a progressive ignoramus, as is everybody in New York City who's in high places. It's the most painful thing to watch. And every time they see a new failure, what they think is a failure of regulation, not in the sense that it's too tough, but that it's too lax. And so they tighten the screws again, and the situation only gets worse. This is a downward spiral. And if you want to know what's going to happen, the people who can't rent in New York City, they're going to move to Tennessee, Florida, Texas. All the population flows in one direction. And as those people leave, the income from the upper class that you need to support your welfare programs is going to start to disappear. And New York City is going to crumble. And it's not going to be a rising ocean of money, of water. It's going to be a rising motion of debt and insufficient funding. This city is poised for serious kinds of problems.
Professor,
it's just a needless charity.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, I'm John Beck.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.